Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Sister Girls Book Club podcast. And I'm back. My name is Sheree, for those who don't know. And I'm back with somebody that I'm so excited to have on the show today. I read her book, and y'all know her as the founder of, you know, it transformed literally how Black women, I think, started to show up in spaces to get help, therapy for Black girls. You know, from the podcast, the directory of website for therapists. And now she has a book. So this, without further ado, is Dr. Joy Harden Bradford. You're a licensed psychologist, you're a speaker, and now you're an author. I got the book, I read the book, and it was amazing. It's something about this book. I just told my friend, I feel like this is the book that I would give to every Black girl as like a gift, or just as something that if they wanted to find sisterhood, if they wanted to find like just a way to reconnect with us, with each other, on a level that's not like accusatory or pointing the finger, but just kind of like wants to help you, this would be the book. So, the title of the book, okay, Sisterhood Heals, The Transformative Power of Healing in Community. So once again, how are you doing? And welcome to the show. I'm so happy to have you here.
Thank you so much. What a beautiful introduction. I love that you said that is the book that you want to gift to all Black girls, because that's really what my hope was in writing it, is that it would be one of those books that you wanted to pass around and like gift to your little cousins and your sisters and your aunties. I'm very happy to hear that you enjoyed it in that way.
Yes, that's exactly how I took it, because like I said, it felt good. So my first question is, Black women are everything. And this book is like, to me, a gateway for us to see each other and ourselves. What made you go in that direction of sisterhood and not the sole focus of just being on like writing a book about becoming a better Black woman? Like, you focused it on sisterhood as a collective.
Yeah. You know, I kind of see those things as intertwined, right? Like, I really feel like a lot of what it means to be well as Black women is really centered in our community and centered in the idea that we help each other to be better. And when I think about the foundation of a lot of the work that we do at Therapy for Black Girls, it really is based on sisterhood, this idea that we all want to be well, and that really looks like looking out for one another.
Yeah, I get that. And one thing I also loved about that, about sisterhood, was that the questions that started were posed from like other Black women. So what made you go into that direction? It was like, each woman led into another chapter or a different dimension of the book or a different theme or topic. It was just like, for those who haven't, obviously the book's not out yet, but it's like you get a passage from a real life Black woman voicing her concern, almost like a radio show, like a call-in. Yeah. And then you get like, then you introduce it. So why was it important for you to use real Black women and not just scenarios in pop culture?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm a huge pop culture fan, so there definitely is some of that sprinkled in the book, as of course you know. But you know, I am a old school lover of like advice columns, and it really felt important to me to include voices from women in the Therapy for Black Girls community. I have not done this work alone, and I really wanted to hear like what were the themes and the kinds of topics that came up from women in the community around sisterhood and the things that we want to celebrate, but the things that also made it challenging. And I think it was really helpful. It can be helpful for readers to kind of ground in some kind of an example that they might resonate with. So do you recognize this story that I shared in the beginning of the chapter? Does it sound like somebody in your sister circle? And that makes it a little easier, I think, to digest the information.
Yes, I think so too. Because I think for me, while I was reading, it was low key like a therapy session for myself. I was like, well, dang, you start to question. You start thinking about, well, which friend am I in the group dynamic? And what friend, like, you know, do I show up as like Tony Chow's and girlfriends? Do I show up as Joan? Do I show up as like, you know, who am I? And I think that was also really good, because in the beginning of the book, you laid like the groundwork of like the logic and like the psychology behind it. And then you kind of broke it down, and then you led into like the personal relationships, and then you intertwine pop culture as well. So when I think about like friend groups or even like moving in sisterhood, I often think that we always look at like a show, like it's popular right now, like memes and stuff. You'll be like, oh, who's the friend like in Living Single, or like in Girlfriends, or like in Insecure? What side did we take when they started arguing with Insecure? And so I think when you can't find yourself, because I often see people, like, especially Black women, they'll voice their opinions like, well, I've always rolled by myself, or I can't find that friend group, or when I'm in that friend group, I still feel alone or lonely. So what do you offer to those women who are looking for, like, a place, because they don't see themselves in, like, a Khadijah James or Regine or a Sinclair or, you know, a Maxine or any of these people that we really place ourselves on? They're like, I don't fit nobody. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And they're trying to, like, fit that mold, but it's just not working for them.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know that we necessarily want to talk about it as a mold. I mean, I think it's fun to play with those pop culture, because a lot of shows have, like, four friends and they have, like, all these different personalities. And so I thought it would be fun to kind of play with that for the book, because I do think that there are some roles that we do assume in our sister circle. So are you the one who's always getting everybody together? Are you the one who's going to be the first one to address the elephant in the room? Like, are you the one that kind of stays back and doesn't say much, but when you do talk, everybody's listening, right? Like, I think we tend to take on some of those roles in our groups. And I think it's important to think about, like, do you enjoy playing that role in your group? Or would you actually rather not be the one who always has to call the group together for the group to get together? So I think it's important for us to think about who we are in our friendship circles. But I think it is important. We can't deny that there has been a lot of hurt, I think, for a lot of sisters in friendships, you know. So a lot of, every time I talk about, like, friendship breakups and, like, the things that happen when we have to, you know, sadly end a friendship, there's a lot of conversation. And so I don't want to overlook the pain that a lot of sisters have had in terms of friendships, but just like anything that has been painful, that doesn't mean that we don't eventually heal and then try again. And I think what has happened for a lot of people is that they have had a betrayal from a friendship or something and have decided, you know what, I'm not even dealing with this anymore. Like, I'm just going to be to myself. And that is a legitimate reaction, right? After a bad thing, a painful thing has happened. But what could you be missing out on in the beauty of relationships with other Black women if you don't ever give other people a chance? And so I think it is as much for the people who have been hurt, but it is also for those of us on the other side to be on the lookout for people who maybe have had some of these wounds, to maybe be gentle with one another and to try to encourage and involve people as much as possible so that nobody actually does feel left out of the circle.
Yes, I like that, because I often think about that. I know you said we don't internalize it because it is social media, but you'd be surprised at how many people really, if they can't see themselves in a character or in, like, a circle that was created, or even, like, in pictures, when we see, like, friend groups and pictures going on trips and stuff, they're like, you know, they have, like, little message, and it's just like, can we reimagine what a friend group can look like and how you show up in that space? Or is it just about the aesthetic? So that was a question that I had too. Like, how do we discern, like, in your book writing, you broke down like different people that we might show up as in sisterhood circles, and even like when you mentioned being a global sister, how do we make sure that we're not stuck in the imagery of sisterhood and actually being a participant in what sisterhood is really? Because a lot of times, like, we have the brunches, we have the speakers panel series, we have, you know, the dinners, the trips, and then we go to these places or the places that we think are safe spaces for Black women to have the sisterhood, and you get there and you realize, oh, it's just performative, or it's just about money, or you only like us because we look a certain way. So how do we kind of, like, not avoid it, but just really take that away, go into it with a clearer mind when we think about sisterhood?
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like a reference in this part of the book that I call sisterhood is not for sale.
Yes.
Because, you know, I do think, and that is most hurtful to me, when people pretend to have a value of sisterhood and, like, seem as if they are really invested, because we know that, like, Black girls ride for one another, right? And so who is buying the tickets to all the brunches and all the retreats and all of those things? It's typically other Black women. Mm-hmm. And so I think if you are somebody who is sponsoring these kinds of activities, it is really incumbent upon you to make sure that people have a good experience, you know? So don't sell this idea of sisterhood if then people leave feeling more isolated and more rejected than when they came there in the first place. And I think you have to really have some hard conversations with yourself. Like, if you are in the business of planning experiences for Black women or doing things in the name of sisterhood, there needs to be some self-assessment so that you're actually valuing sisterhood and not just pretending or trying to, you know, kind of get rich off of Black women, as opposed to actually pouring into Black women and creating spaces where we can connect and really be seen and affirmed by one another.
Yes, that's it, because I think that's like a big thing, especially now because we're like the digital generation. And so a lot of friendships, even relationships that are intimate, are being formed from the comforts of you having like a phone, and you're starting these friendships and just, you know, even becoming like a content creator or somebody interviewing somebody, it might, your platform might begin talking to people who you don't even know. And then it's like when you see them in real life, it might be a totally different setup. So my next question is that you quoted Dr. Robin Dunbar, an anthropologist and evolutionary psychologist, and the quote was, "Friendship is the single most important factor influencing our health, well-being, and happiness." So if that's true, and I do believe that it is, how do you think that we can move away from the Western thinking of every person for themselves? Because that is really how social media and like the imagery, it's almost like we got to be number one. We got to be, it's always just a single person. So if we want to move into places of sisterhood, how do we do that when the messaging is so opposite that?
Well, I think we have to be mindful of where that messaging is coming from, right? You know, so messaging that kind of pits us one against one another, and you know, only one Black girl can be the winner, and like there's only space for one of us. It really typically does not come from within the community. Even if it does, it is something that has been fed to us that is not historically kind of like how we have moved. And so I think we have to be mindful of where we are getting these messages from, and also promote counter messaging, right? So I think that largely sisterhood heals is that, right? Like let us reimagine and expand our ideas about what it looks like for us to be in community with one another, because we know that we do better when we are all in together, right? Like this idea that only one person can be successful, well, where does that leave the rest of us, right? And so how can we actually all do our part so that all of us can win? I think that when we embrace those kinds of ideals, we see more examples of everybody being successful and everybody being able to have a role in the circle, not just one person. And so I think it really is kind of avoiding and kind of you know, being mindful of where some of that messaging is coming from, and really programming ourselves to think about things in a different way.
Okay, I think, yeah, that's definitely true, because I think we go into it and we just have the imagery, but we don't really question anything on our end. So, but what about the messaging that comes from our end? So, for example, like you had in your book, like the popular teaching in the Black community is that from very young, you have like older Black women, even our mothers, telling us who we should be around, or those girls are the good girls, and those girls are not the good girls. And it's like how much of friendships we are missing out on because of those messaging. And even like when we see our family members argue and fight with other women, and they kind of give us this without even telling us directly out their mouths. So it's just like, how do you think we can dismantle that way of thinking so that we could kind of move forward to building a stronger sisterhood? And I think, I know before you answer that, because that was something that was on my mind, because I'm just like, it doesn't even have to come from in the home, even in like your place of worship. So that's a totally different like dynamic, because now it's like God. You know what I mean? So it's like, how do we combat God?
Yeah, so again, I think it is about the awareness of knowing that those kinds of messages do impact how we relate to other Black women. So if you have always grown up and moms and aunties and grandma have said like, oh, watch out for those kinds of girls, or like you said, these are good girls and these are not, well, who decided what was good, right? And what might you be missing out on if you don't expand your idea about what good means, or what, who deserves care, or who deserves companionship, or deserves to be in relationship with one another? And so I think it is about understanding that those messages came from somewhere, right? So historically, you know, we know that there has been like survival connected to like showing up in one way, right? Like that's kind of like where that respectability politics kind of idea comes from. And so historically, maybe that was helpful and like needed, but do we still need to hold on to those kinds of ideas today? And how well have they even served us anyway, right? So this idea that these people or these kinds of women are not the kind of women that we want to be in relationship. Well, who said that? And is it helpful for us to continue to hold on to that, or is it more helpful for us to examine where we got these messages from, and to include more people in the circle, and to have conversations, some hard conversations with one another about maybe the ways we have behaved in the past that we're not so proud of, and how we can do a better job moving forward.
Speaking of hard conversations, there was a nice sized portion of like having those tough conversations with your friend groups and just your your other sisters and like about being jealous of maybe feeling when somebody's getting an announcement of engagement or a baby or a new job. It's so many places and moments where you can have a human moment, but you don't want to show up as a jealous friend or as the envious friend. And like, how do you even start that conversation when we know that those are real human emotions? Like, it's not alien for someone if you don't feel very comfortable in your own life, and then your friends are like moving up in your opinion and doing well all around, that you feel, you know, smaller or less than, and you don't want to like pop up to the brunch or pop out to wherever because you're like, dang, I don't feel good in that space. Mm-hmm. So why is it that we can how do you think, baby, that we can start having those conversations? Because we show up for each other so well when we're rallying for each other. But when we have to be very intimate and have those real conversations, it gets very tricky. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is? And how do you think that we can really, like, I don't know, really, I'm thinking about like real conversations that I had to have with my friends, and I've had some real ones, and it takes so much prep. It's like, okay, if I do that and she says that, it could go this way. Okay, it could go that way. And it's like, this is a lot.
It is a lot, but that is what it means to be human, right? And I think as Black women, we often struggle with this because so much of our socialization has been to kind of be robot-like, mm-hmm. and into these capes that we have to wear and kind of showing up for everybody and like never having emotions, never allowing people to see us, you know, struggle. And I think that makes it difficult for us to be intimate with one another in a lot of ways. And so what you're talking about are these very real human emotions like jealousy, like envy, like, you know, whatever, that I think we struggle to give voice to because it's very shameful, right? So you feel ashamed of yourself, like, oh, I should be happy for my friend, but I'm also really disappointed that my life has not turned out in some kind of way, right? And it really comes down to being able to hold the idea that two things can be true at the same time. So you can be really happy for her, but also really sad that this cool thing has not happened for you. Yeah. And I think even if it is hard, it is important to give voice to those things for a couple of different reasons. One, because the relationship really might depend on it, right? Because what happens is that we tend to act out passively aggressively when something's going on, right? Mm-hmm. So we end up missing the brunch, the bridal brunch, or we, you know, do something else to kind of throw a monkey wrench in the plans, when really we could have just given voice to, I'm feeling the kind of way about this thing happening, and I feel like I need to let you know. And so we're often worried that like we're going to hurt her feelings, or, you know, she's not going to want to be friends with us anymore. But if we act out in those kinds of ways, then that is actually what ends up happening, right? So now she's really disappointed that you ruined her bridal brunch or whatever, and doesn't feel like you're a good friend. When if you could have said like, hey, you know, I want to be honest with you, like, I'm really happy for you, but I'm also really sad that this hasn't happened for me, right? Now, you might not want to say that like the night of her engagement, but at some other point, like, I think it is okay to actually give voice to these very human things. And even if she's a little defensive and, you know, kind of can't hear it in the moment, I still think that that's better than like the passive aggressive ways that we often act out because we don't give credit and don't give voice to our own needs and our own experiences.
That's very true. And so speaking on that, or just like having wants and needs, how do you feel like we should approach topics where it almost feels like there's no winning in the situation, right? You still want, we're not at the point where we don't want to be friends with people, because I think that's, it's almost like sometimes when you get in with friendships, with Black sisterhood, period, it's like, if we're not in agreement, sometimes it can feel like we're at war. And it's like, we're not at war, girl. It's not, it's okay. We disagree. But for the sake of just having community, because it, I think we look at sisterhood sometimes as like my best friend or my friends or my friendship groups. And we don't look at ourselves, like you said, as global sisters and having that global sisterhood. So when we're outside of those comfort circles and we're still trying to show up for other sisters, it's almost, it can feel very combative. Like, if you don't agree with me, then it's like, we can't even be at the same table. And that's not necessarily the case, because while you're not my BFF or you're my immediate sister circle, you are a sister to me. And there's some type of like an allegiance that I have to you. And I want to be there for you in a way that is beneficial to both of us and that we can have reciprocity. But I don't want to feel like a battle is about to happen every time. Like, how do we have that balance of like, we BFFs, but girl, if you need me, I'm going to be there.
Right, right. You know, so I think it really kind of depends on the situation, because, you know, I do think that there is there is something to be said about like how we treat one another, regardless of like a white gaze, mm-hmm. right? So I am in full agreement that sometimes, you know, publicly we need to be praising one another, but privately mm-hmm. we might need to have a different kind of conversation, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think if somebody's doing something harmful, I think that that's a different story. But if mm-hmm. you just disagree because somebody, you know, believes something and, you know, you believe something differently, is it important for you to be super loud in criticizing whatever this other sister's point is? Or could you just say, you know what, she might not be my kind of person. I might not listen to this podcast. I might not buy that book, but, you know, she's free to kind of talk about whatever she wants, regardless of if it's my thing, because maybe it's somebody else's thing. But I think a lot of times we get caught up in like being super loud about the things we disagree with. And is that really necessary? You know, especially with other Black women, given that we know that we don't get, you know, a lot of funding in terms of our businesses, we know a lot of our creative projects are still not getting greenlit, you know. And so I do think sometimes we don't need to be as loud with our criticism, especially of other Black women.
Talk about criticism. That's a good segue. And so my next question is definitely about criticism, because building sisterhood in the workplace specifically can be very tricky, because on the one hand, you want to get to the top, right? You want to be number one, and you still also want to have that sisterhood, and you want to build it with other Black women in the space, or it might just be you and one other Black woman. So how do you think we can balance? Can there be a balance of us trying to get climb that corporate ladder or get that number one trophy, whatever it is for us, while also maintaining sisterhood? Can they coexist? Or we have to kind of like choose one?
Mm-hmm. I think that they can coexist. And in the book, I talk about, you know, in corporate spaces, are you the kind of sister who gets to a place? You know, we know that a lot of us find ourselves, depending on what we do or where we find ourselves, as like one of many or like the only one, right? And so when you find yourself in that kind of a space, are you somebody who is like swinging the door wide open behind you and thinking like, okay, I got here and now I'm bringing as many sisters as possible with me? Or are you somebody who closes the door behind you, right? And so I think that is what it looks like to build sisterhood in corporate spaces, is that when you find yourself in, you know, maybe an elevated position, you are then working to bring as many sisters behind you. You know, and I think that those two things can happen. Like there are ways that you can kind of still do what you need to do and kind of play the game, but also be bringing people behind you. I think the problem with sisterhood and where it breaks down is when we kind of find ourselves in the C-suite and we are so wanting to kind of protect our own position that we are slamming the door behind us, as opposed to like grooming the next generation and like, okay, who's going to come after me? How can I bring as many people into this as possible?
Yes, I agree. But then I'm like, in practice, it seems a little bit harder, because I thought about the example that you even used when you worked at Clark. And you had the administrative assistant who was older than you, mm-hmm. who had longevity. She knew the ins and outs of the job. And you were actually her boss. And instead of her like trying to disregard who you were in the space, she helped you out. Like she was just going to like help to guide you. But I feel like oftentimes a lot of like the arguments can be made that when younger Black women get into these spaces and there's other older Black women, it's a generational gap, right? Mm-hmm. They've been taught one way, we've been taught another way. And it's like, I want to build that sisterhood with you, but it's just like, we don't even agree about locks being worn at the workplace. Like you have like fundamental values that right. It's just like mind blowing. So how do we even build when like core values are different, but it's not in a sense of like, these are my, like I said, my BFFs. I'm still mm-hmm. trying to make that sisterhood with you, because I know for the betterment of us overall, it's good for us to be on one accord somewhere in the workspace. Mm-hmm. If you don't even like me because I have locks, or because my nails are long, or right. because I wear bright colors, or whatever it is, like how do we get past that when you're trying?
Right. The truth is that sadly you might not be able to, right? Because the truth is that everybody can't go. You know, and so if you are not somebody who really does believe in sisterhood as a value, sisterhood as a practice, then you might actually be in the way. And so it's not as if, you know, like completely discarding like somebody who maybe feels those values, but it's clear that we are not on the same page. And so if I'm wanting to kind of foster a community where everybody can win and you are like vehemently opposed to that, then that means I need to build community with other people who also believe that thing. Because a lot of times we will slow ourselves down and kind of get get stuck when we are trying to like change somebody else's mind, when likely they are not going to change their mind. And so I think there can be a way where we leave space for if that ever happens, that they do change their mind, but that that doesn't stop you of the work from continuing to kind of grow in sisterhood and like connecting with other sisters who do want to have that kind of thing.
Yeah, I agree with that, because I do think it can be hard, but it's like sometimes it can be one small thing that helps us bridge it, just to like love of music or just something smaller or just an agreement on something. It's like it takes, sometimes we go into things with already a negative stereotype about what people are like in a workspace or how this is or whatever. Mm-hmm. So my next question is, it was a quote that you said, when it's glorious, it's when we got us, it's glorious, but when we don't, it's painful. And then you use like the honeypot example, and you use so many examples that we can see where we rally behind each other. Like, and I mean, we'll buy up all the products, we'll do all of this. But when it comes to extending grace, it's just like, where is it? Like, you know, where is it? And I remember specifically the honeypot, I call it an incident, you know, because in the beginning, once we felt like she needed to be protected, we purchased everything. I was one of the people who went to Target and got some stuff. Like, I was there. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as we thought that she wasn't for us, it wasn't even a space or a time gap that we gave her to just be like, well, what's up? Like, can you answer some of these questions? It was like, we immediately went on a defense. Yeah. And I wanted to know, especially because now we're such in a digital space with everything, with clothing, with brands, with anything, is like the moment we think someone is not for us, and particularly Black women, not only do we want to like stop them, we want to drag them to the pits of hell. Mm-hmm. And we want to open up that pit and drag them some more. So it's like, why do we do that, number one? And how can we stop it? Because you see it every single day. Yeah. And then when she came out and told, like, she had to do like a whole campaign just to get people to say, I remember she had the scientists come on and all this other stuff. I remember I tweeted, I was like, I'll never forget how y'all did, because, and it makes you scared to want to even show up in that space. Even if you know something is needed, it's like, these will be the people that you're fighting so hard to protect or to be there for will be the ones that will have you sitting at your office talking about help me. So why do we do that is the question. And how can we like just pause for a moment before we just go ham?
Yeah. So I think a lot of things happened there that were completely uncalled for, but I feel like a part of it is that online activity, I think, flattens our humanity in a lot of ways. So we kind of are interacting with each other as these like avatars and not as like whole people, right? Like if I see you or even on this call, or if I saw you in person, like I'm going to interact with you very different because I can like see the fullness of who you are. But like online, for some reason, like that is flattened and we're like just interacting with boxes and pictures, and somehow like something has gotten distorted and we are forgetting that these are real, actual living people with feelings and emotions and all of these things on the other side of the screen. And so I think we are thinking about it as if we're like talking back to a TV screen, like fighting with a movie, but this is a real other sister that you're interacting with. And so I think the first step is us remembering that these are real people on the other side of whatever conversation we're engaging with. And I think a lot of people got inflamed and like, you know, like really, really triggered in a lot of ways related to the honeypot situation, because there had been so many other situations where there have been other products and other experiences that we have rallied behind that then ended up getting sold, right? You know, so I think there's been like Carol's Daughter and like Shea Moisture, and that doesn't feel good, I think, for a lot of people, like when they have been the early builders of a product and like the marketing has been really exclusive to them, and those sisters are like involved and like, okay, this is for you. And, you know, kind of going back to our earlier conversation around sisterhood is for sale. And so I think you have to be careful as a business owner to be mindful of like the kinds of decisions you're making when you're getting communities involved in your marketing. You can't like pretend that you're super invested, and then when it makes good business sense, you just disregard the community. Like, who wants that? Like, that doesn't feel good to anybody. And so I think for Black women in particular, that has happened to us so many times that anytime something looks like it's going to kind of feel that way, we are like at alert, right? And we're ready to kind of like, oh my gosh, like here the thing is happening again. Now that still does not call for all of the ways that people reacted to Beatrice, I think. But I do think that, you know, when you peel the layers back, you can see kind of how we got there. And so I think everybody just needs to kind of take a step back and think about like, okay, this is another person. Is it really necessary for me to interact with them in this way? But I also think as business owners who do a lot of marketing exclusively to Black women, you do have a different, I think, onus. Like there's a different responsibility when you build businesses and products that are exclusive to Black women. And then, you know, you want to make different kinds of business decisions. Like you can't then disregard the community.
I agree, because I just felt like it was so many different points of view, and a lot of points of view was specifically for that incident. It was valid, but it just felt like it was just too hard. Like it was so hard. It was
way overboard.
It doesn't feel like this is the right type of like, just, we can't justify this part. Yeah. So another story that I wanted to talk about was the story of Shanquilla Robinson, right? The young Black woman who was killed allegedly by her friends when she went away for vacation. And that we saw in real time, because the imagery and things that we've created for ourselves as Black women, just in general, has always been very, very positive. We haven't seen in a while of like, this type of friendship being played out in like real time, right? Because we saw video images started popping out of her friends and her fighting, and just it was so much like against what we stand for, right? Mm-hmm. We are the girls who created Black Girl Magic, and you know, all of those beautiful things, and the Crown Act, you know. So where we really focus to be positive. And so when that came out, then you started getting all these threads on Twitter of like, yes, this is my story too. Like, it's time for me to tell the story about my friend group, or it's time for me to tell the story about how me and my best friend, how she betrayed me, or it's time for me to tell the story about, you know, the Black woman who I worked at, who was my boss at work. Or everybody started having these painful conversations, but there wasn't this. There wasn't that. There wasn't really like a solution. It was just like, everybody started telling us what happened to them, but there wasn't really like a discourse on how can we fix this, or what the dynamics of friendship can be, or like what could have been done properly, or what could have like saved this woman. Mm-hmm. And so I want to know, like, in your opinion, why, when something bad happens with the sisterhood, do we not give like solutions? Like, nobody really walked away with a solution with that. It was just kind of like, and this is why I don't got a lot of gang of friends, and this is why I'm by myself, and this is why. It's like we almost was like, yeah, girl, I was waiting for this to happen, and just to let everybody know this is why. So I just wanted to know your opinion on that. Like, there was no real actual conversation about how we can be better friends, how we can show up as better women to each other. In those spaces, it was just kind of like, let's all just dump and then walk away.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't know a lot of the details, because I try to stay away from like traumatic stories. Mm-hmm. Like that. I mean, I do know with the story that you're talking about. And so I don't know, like, were there things that had happened in their friendship before that, you know, like would lead one to believe that these were not people to be trusted? From what I remember, there hadn't been. And so she kind of went and thinking like, oh, we're friends, we're going to go to this thing. And then whatever ended up happening that they killed her, I just do not know. Like, none of that makes sense. And then, you know, we got half stories and, you know, all of that stuff. But I do think a lot of the reason why then people started sharing about their own experiences with travel and, you know, their own experiences, because we do try to hold, I think, to our earlier conversation around like not criticizing each other publicly. I think a lot of times we don't come forward with these kinds of stories because we don't want to bash other Black women, right? But there is something to be said about the fact that even if we are Black women to one another, some people still need a lot of help figuring out whatever is going on in their own lives, right? And then they interact with other people who are in different places, and then we, you know, get these kinds of situations. And so I think the only thing I can say about this situation is to be mindful of, you know, red flags, you know, because a lot of times we will stay in friendships and continue in relationships because there's history, right? Or we don't want to say like, okay, I think this person doesn't have the best intentions for me, right? Like, if you tried to have some of these difficult conversations and like you're not seeing any different indifference or changed behavior, then it may actually be time to end a friendship. You don't want to continue in a friendship or a relationship if they are harmful to you, or if you've tried to, you know, address concerns and you're not seeing anything being different, then it's okay to say, you know what, this was what it was. And I think it's time for us to move in different situations or move on different paths.
Yes, I agree. Cause I just feel like it was so much around why we don't have friends or why I don't have friends. And it wasn't really like, okay, what can you do to be like a better friend, or what, or how to check in on your friends? Or if you've had an argument, did you flesh it out or let it like pause it for a day or two and then come back to it? Yeah. But speaking of friendships and having hard,
I want to also go back to that story. Because I also think that like most friendship arguments don't end in murder.
No, right?
Extreme. And so of course,
but the threads were just like, why you don't have, like, this is why I don't have a friend group, right, or why I move by myself. It was like everybody had a sit down moment. I was like, well, dang, this opened like a can of worms, and everybody was just like, this is why I don't trust women, or this is why I only have guys.
I think we have to be careful not to use like the most extreme, like worst examples to then define what all relationships with Black women look like. Mm-hmm. Like, of course, that's sad that that happened. But that doesn't mean that like all friendship groups are going to end up in this kind of way.
Yes. I agree. But another point I wanted to make was that when a friendship is coming to an end and it's we have dissolved our friendship contract, as Nene and Cynthia have told us about contracts. And you talked about it being an emotional disruption. And I thought that was like, wow, that is very interesting, because I've never heard anybody like really put it like that. It was just like, oh, we're not friends no more. And it's just, you know, it is what it is. But there is a grieving process. And I don't think a lot of people give space for that. And it was an aha moment for me, because you said it was when it's not a death that's when it's not a person that dies, it's called disenfranchised grief. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, we do go through like heartache over a friendship ending, because I've thought about like times when I've had disagreements with my friends and we don't speak for an extended amount of time because everybody's mad and in their corners. It literally disrupts your day because you send each other memes all day. You talk to your friends all day and without realizing it. And I think it's like, how can we hold space for when friends are not together anymore, but also if we're in the same friend group and know the same friends, and how to kind of like deal with that moving forward? Because now it's just like with a boyfriend, you like, dang, I don't want to go to that restaurant no more because he might be there. Right. It's like, it's the same thing. People kind of like pedestalize like intimacy and intimate friendships and relationships and stuff, and they don't like realize like it's the same exact situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're like, what's your
heartbreak can come from a lot of different places. And so you're right. Like, I think there's been a lot of energy given to romantic heartbreak or the grief related to losing like a family member. But the grief that we experience as the result of a friendship breakup is very much the same thing. And so because there aren't the same kind of rituals and like care given with a friendship breakup, that is what we call disenfranchised grief. So grief that does not follow like the same rituals and like is given the same attention as like a death or something like that. And so it is really important to like not beat up on yourself if you're feeling really sad or distraught or distressed because of a friendship breakup, because it is a very real grief experience. And so I think it's important for you to find people that you can talk with who will not minimize that grief for you and won't make you feel bad about grieving the situation. So this could be some other friends, it could be a therapist, it could be whoever, but you need somebody that you can talk to who's not going to make you feel bad or silly or tell you like, oh, you got other friends, like that's not that big of a deal, right? Like it is a big deal and you deserve to take the time that you need to actually grieve that relationship. I definitely think it can get really tricky with like groups of friends, because it is, you know, like you have this whole history and whole story together and now like things are weird and awkward. And so I do think, again, this means that somebody has to have a difficult conversation around what does it look like for us to be in the space together with one another? Like, do we want to like still go to things together where we can kind of be on different sides of a room, or would you prefer not to be invited? Like, I think having separate conversations with the friends who are no longer friends can be really helpful. And I also think it's important for nobody to try to like get them back together prematurely, right? So if they've decided like, we don't want to be friends friends, it is probably not helpful for anybody to kind of have some kind of intervention where y'all bring them to somewhere and they don't both know they're going to be there and try to like hash it out. Like, that's probably not, not
going to be helpful. It might not end the same way.
Might not end well at all. I think you got to give, you know, give people space and like give them credit for making the decision that they felt like was best for them at the time. And if they find their way back to one another at some point, then okay, you can move forward. But trying to like push them together when they've decided that they want to end the friendship is probably not a good idea.
Yes, I totally agree, because I think a lot of times we see TV, I'm like, it might not end.
Not going in like a TV.
They're not friends anymore. And my next question, we're almost done. I got like one more question after that, is having tough conversations, right? Again, I go back to us like rallying for each other. We're quick to run out to rally for each other and to stand up against wrong injustice against Black women. We will yell and scream to the mountaintops. But when it comes to us having those hard conversations, like colorism, for instance, that was one of the examples that you used, where in my opinion, I feel like everybody feels like, because I don't agree with the feeling, but I feel like everyone feels like they're hurting. So you will get someone who's dark skinned and they are telling you, colorism is for darker skinned people, in my opinion. But you will get a light skinned woman be like, well, because when I was, and I'm like, that is bullying. That is not colorism, right? You know, and that we have to, definitions matter. Mm-hmm. But when we have these conversations, when everyone feels like they have been hurt, right? So if you, like I said, for colorism, for instance, using not how I understand colorism, but using how some people will use that as a tool to kind of like say, well, I've been oppressed too, and this is why. So they're not understanding the dynamic. Everyone in the space feel hurt. Mm-hmm. And so how do we have those tough conversations where everyone feels like they're entitled to their hurt, or no hurt is bigger than the other hurt? And we're trying to have a serious conversation to move us forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think when you try to have those conversations, you have to be very intentional about like setting ground rules and like making sure that everybody is on the same page. Because I think a lot of the times with these colorism conversations, like it goes off the rails really quickly because everybody is not operating with the same definition, right? So there is like a technical definition, but I think because everybody doesn't understand that or doesn't know that, then they want to talk about like the painful experiences they've had as a result of their skin color as well, which are valid, right? Like absolutely, lighter skin people have maybe experienced some different things because of their skin tone, but that's not a colorism conversation. Like that is a racism, that is a prejudice kind of conversation, right? And so I think you have to start there by like going over the definitions and letting people know, like, this is not an attempt to like make anybody's hurt any more than anybody else's, but right now we are specifically focusing on this thing. And then later we can expand the conversation to also talk about how this has happened for different people who look different ways. But I think, you know, really helping people to focus in and like hear, like, okay, this is not an attempt to invalidate your pain, but right now this is what we're talking about.
Yes, and I agree with you, because I feel like everybody wants to be centered, especially when we're Black women, because we have everything coming at us. So it feels like, right. No, it's my pain too. So like, right. How do we have that when we're not even on the same page of what colorism even means?
Right.
So you spoke about the systems that are in place to keep us, that are designed to keep us kind of like in a scarcity lifestyle, a scarcity mindset when dealing with each other. So you have misogyny, you have the patriarchy, you have white supremacy, you have all this coming together. And let's just say, I'm someone who understands that, right? And I'm at the workplace. I have the tools. I read the book. I highlighted. I did all the things. But in that moment, when you have another Black woman who I know doesn't get it, mm-hmm. and I'm in a situation, how do I remember? Okay, let me go back to what Dr. Joy said, because this woman is going to try to get me to forget I read a whole book. and you know, I can have this conversation with you because I'm not in that moment right now. Mm-hmm. But when you're in it, it's so hard to remember the steps, the book, the work. It's the systems. It's not the system. It's mm-hmm. the system. So how do you think that we can like really in practice really live by it? Because mm-hmm. it's very easy to have this conversation right here. And then when you get Miss Jennings at the job, but I know she's gonna say something about my hair. I know she's gonna say pull down the skirt. I know she's gonna do. It's like, how do I put this in real life practice?
Right. So I think it is important for us to remember that we are human. And so there are responses that we might have to certain situations that we might want to do over. Right. So if you have a human moment and you say something and then, you know, 2 days later, you're like, you know what, I really shouldn't have said that. Like I was, you know, feeling emotional and maybe we can have a different conversation now. So I do think we have to give ourselves grace. Like we are not social justice robots. Like we're not going to respond empathically all the time. So I don't want, you know, people to kind of get caught up in feeling like, okay, I got to be an A+ student in this. I think it's important to give yourself grace. But I do think when you are calmer and, you know, when you like, when maybe the emotional height has passed, for you to think about like, okay, what was I really reacting to there? And is there something that I could say to this person that lets them know, like, I'm still setting a boundary. Like, it's not okay for you to talk about my skirt or my hair or whatever, but maybe you want to say it in a way that feels calmer or that they are more likely to receive it. Now, the truth is that, you know, some people still will not get the message, but if you feel like there's something that you want to do different or phrase it a different way, it's okay to go back later and say, hey, I apologize for the way that I spoke to you, but I also want to be clear that this is not okay. You know, it's not okay for you to say X, Y, Z. You know, so give yourself a moment and then come back if you feel like you need to. Because sometimes, you know, you just are, you've had enough, right? And that comment that day is like the straw that breaks the camel's back, and you just can't have a, you know, the best, highest self response. It's okay to kind of give yourself some time to come back to that later.
Well, this has been a great conversation. The book is amazing. I guess my last question is, what is your like ultimate hope and your goal for this book? What do you want other Black women to walk away with after they get to the last page and you give us like a wrap up? Because it felt like a nice little session. I was like, well, this was a nice little session for me. It read like it. We had homework. We had little surveys to take. We had to really like sit with it. And I think that's what also made the book a really a great read, because it wasn't just like read all this. I had to kind of stop and process it and really take some inventory. Yeah. So I just want you to thank you, first of all, for writing this. And then second of all, like, what is your hope for other sister girls to walk away with hit the last page?
Yeah. So my hope is that y'all will have some very juicy conversations in your group chats. I love already like people who got early copies to hear that people are like putting the quiz that, you know, to figure out which friend are you in the group. People are dropping that in the group chats and are having like incredible conversations. That is exactly what I want, is for people to have conversations with one another about like how they are showing up for each other in their sister circle, but also for how we can show up for one another as a global sisterhood, and like what kinds of tasks can we move forward with in taking better care of one another.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. This has been a joy to speak with you, and thank you so much. Can you tell people where to find you? And get the book, people. It's good. It's so good. I can't stop. I've been telling my friends, because they don't have a copy because I got it early. I was like, when it comes out, I'll buy the book for you, because we need to talk about some things. Yes. I've been highlighted so much in this book that got my highlights.
We love a good notated book. So you can find me at Hello Dr. Joy across all places on social, and you can grab your copy of the book at sisterhoodheals.com. Definitely support your independent local bookstores if you can, but you can also buy it on all of the places that you typically find books.
Thank you so much, Dr. Joy. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.